for our fathers, pray for our mothers, wishing our families well. We sing songs for the wishing of those who are kissing, but not for the missing. So this one's for all the lost children. This one's for all. Dressing, counting your blessings, biding your time. You lay me down sleeping, my heart is weeping, because I'm keeping a place for all.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, depending on what part of this lovely world you're listening to us from. You're welcome to the 138th live edition of Life Legal. Sadly, it's been 922 days since the Chibok girls have been gone. You know, that's the figure we don't like calling. Welcome to Life and Legal. It's your friend and your lawyer, HBO Odusoya. Many thanks for joining me.
It's getting dark. I think we better go home now.
Thank you for joining me for today's edition of Life and Legal, the 138th live edition in the series. Life and Legal is reaching you live this Saturday morning. And if you're listening to us on Sunday, the 23rd day of October 2016, or on Monday, the 24th day of October 2016, during the repeat broadcast editions, I say welcome to you as well. However, this morning, the 22nd day of October 2016, we're reaching you live from the Roots Radio Love.com Broadcasters Lounge in Huddersfield, United Kingdom. Roots Radio is a network of broadcast professionals with headquarters in Washington, D.C. This legal information program is brought to you courtesy of Conquest Cradle, the Coach UK Limited, an ideas, innovation and entrepreneurship company. Root Radio Love, a network of broadcast professionals and friends of HBO Odisoya, that is you and I. Root Radio Love is a global community station which thrives through the internet and voluntary listener donations. The radio station focuses on promoting cultural and societal awareness amongst diverse ethnic and cultural geographies of the world. And if you're listening out there and love what you're listening to and want to support, please contact the CEO at www.rootsradiolove.com. Once again, you're welcome to Life and Legal. It's your friend and your lawyer, HBO Odusoya. Now, what we're going to do is to go for a very, very short musical break. And when we come back, we will be taking the program charge of Life and Legal. When Doves Cry. It's your friend and your lawyer, HBO. Why do we scream at each other? This is what it sounds like when doves cry. Why do we scream at each other? Why don't we just calm down and listen to each other? And Be stress-free. It's still your friend and your lawyer, HBO Odusoya, and this is Life and Legal. We go straight away into the program Charge of Life and Legal, and when we come back from that, we will let you know what's the cart inside this bag that we have this morning. Who exactly are we having in the broadcast lounge of RotateYourLove.com this wonderful, lovely Saturday morning? Law is a tool of social engineering. In other words, the law is used to regulate the thinking of you and I and every other person in this society on the overarching basis that everyone is equal before the law. The ultimate effect of this is that a desirable behavioral pattern is produced and maintained across societies and indeed across the world over time. Because social thinking is not static, you will find that as this program goes on, we will be able to demonstrate to you that the law itself is not static. So our parliamentarians and courts keep on fine-tuning the law as society grows and as changes happen in society day by day, year after year. The law is enforceable on the basis of what is called the social contract. In other words, that you, as part of society, has chosen to submit some of your rights in exchange, to a sovereign in exchange for protection of other rights. Laws are best understood and practiced by lawyers. In the UK, the profession of lawyers is divided into two major parts. The solicitors, in most cases, process the cases, leaving the advocacy aspect and sensitive chance of success assessment of case management to barristers. In Nigeria, the profession operates on a fee practice basis, meaning that usually a single individual practices as a barrister and solicitor of the Supreme Court of Nigeria. It's still your friend and your lawyer, HBO Odusoya. When doves cry, I beg your pardon, we'll be right back.
Hello, I am Foluje Adesanya here from our Roots Radio Atlanta studios. Can we talk for a moment? We have enjoyed tremendous amount of support from you since we started, and we are immensely grateful for that. However, we need more of your support to keep up the quality standards you only get from Roots Radio. We need your generous donations. Now, you can make a one-time donation or become a Roots Radio Vision partner by visiting our homepage at www.rootsradiolove.com and click on the orange Donate button. Every Vision partner will receive a Roots Radio logoed t-shirt as a token of appreciation. I've signed up as a Vision partner, and I really hope that you will too. You won't regret it. www.rootsradiolove.com.
I'm Fola Muniz from Croydon, UK. After a hard day's work in central London, I find there's nothing better than coming home and unwinding with rootsradiolove.com. You can download the tuning app onto your Android device or just log on to rootsradiolove.com. They've got everything I need for the rest of my evening. rootsradiolove.com.
It's still your friend and your lawyer, HBO Odusoya. You're very welcome back to the broadcast lounge of RootsRadioLove.com. Once again, I'll say welcome to Life Legal on this 22nd day of October 2016. For the past 4 weeks, we have been discussing stress and the role of the adrenal gland, which produces hormones, adrenaline and cortisol, and the harmful effect of these hormones on our health if uncontained. Today with me in the Broker's Lounge is a gentleman whose schedule, well, spells stress. He's a medical doctor by training, a husband and father, a PhD student in public health and coordinator, Bolton Community Development Partnership. He's also one who speaks life, is one when you ask him how he copes with all this demands, and he will respond by special grace, meaning by God's special grace. He's not shy to tell you that on his own he can do nothing, and that his seeming ability depends on his unwavering belief in the scriptures. Those who are close to him will tell you that he shares daily inspirational messages from Pastor Chris Oyakhilome of Christ Embassy via WhatsApp. Today, he will also share his favorite verses from the Holy Bible, I suspect, which enables him to thrive in spite of his seemingly stressful daily life. So, you're welcome to Life and Legal.
Thanks so much.
Now,
and it's a big privilege. It's a privilege to have you, for you to have me on your lounge.
Well, it's more a privilege for us, actually. Thank you so much for giving of your time. Now,
yeah, thank you.
May we have you introduce yourself and you and also your role at BCDP, especially in relationship to using the ABCD model as a social engineering tool.
Okay, thanks so much. My name is Dr. Obo Akyoyamin. I am the director of Bolton Community Development Partnership, which is based in Bolton. This is a pilot project that the main thing we actually operate using the ABCD model, which is the asset-based community development principles. Now, like, so someone will ask, okay, what's the assets? You know, Kelly, we look at the old model that what most institutions, like maybe some government agencies, is that they identify a community. When they go to those communities, they kind of like identify what are, what's lacking within this community, what are deficiencies. Get what I mean? So those are some things they look at. So how do we now bring in professionals to help with those deficiencies? So let's say, for example, maybe somebody who has issues, maybe this individual, for example, has issues with drugs. So you say, okay, you've tagged the person has issues, deficiency is drugs. Then what do? You bring in the police, you bring in the social service and everything, just to support that individual, because that's his deficiency or her deficiency. Now, but for the asset-based model, what you look at is more like looking at the glass half full. It's, yes, this particular individual has issues with drugs or has another issue, but that same individual could actually paint or bake, or he could do something. He has a gift. He has a talent. He has something he's passionate about, you know. So how do we mobilize these assets that either an individual or community has in order to drive development? So that's the principle of ABCD. So we put the individuals in the center of the community. So that's basically what we're doing in Bolton. And so we're involved in several projects that are aimed at community, those projects that are aimed to drive the community. And another beautiful thing about the, this model is that it's based on sustainability. It can sustain itself because this model is based on basically that when we look at the community, they can actually drive themselves sustainably by identifying already existing assets within those community. So it's not just creating something new. We're identifying those assets, and those assets are broken down into five, which are the individual that I just told you just now. We now have the association assets. Association assets like things like the churches, the mosque, the schools, things like that. Now, the beauty of that level of asset is that it's made up of individuals with different talents all coming together. They amplify their abilities. So that's the power of association. So like in church, for example, in a mosque, for example, they all come to they congregate around one particular interest, which is their faith. So it's driven. So it leads to sustainability. Now, the third level of assets within the community is the institutions. So, for example, your governments, your companies, both paid and unpaid, NGOs, you know, the police, you know, those others, they form that third level of assets. The fifth and the fourth level of asset is the physical asset, like your buildings, your lands, and all that. Then the fifth one, which is, to me, is really important, is the connection. How do we connect the individual assets, the association assets, the institution assets, and physical assets aimed at improving the health and well-being of the community and also of the individual who resides within that community? So basically, those are the things that the asset-based principle is looking at, and that's what BCPP is set up to do as a pilot in Bolton Borough in the UK.
Thank you so much, Dr. Obo Achioyamen. That's quite deep, isn't it? Can you please run our listeners through your disciplinary background? Because the depth of this is going philosophical, as it is, and it's quite strategical as well. But if you don't mind, can you please run our listeners out there through your background, and let's see if we can link it with this infinite space of possibilities that you seem to be creating at BCDP.
Okay, basically, my background, primarily, I graduated from medical school at the University of Benin, Nigeria, 2005.
Yes.
And so the clinical, so that gave me a lot of, you know, because I personally have a passion to help people. And that was one thing that drew me to say, okay, what's the best way to help people? So I now focus, okay, yeah, when you pick up medicine, then you'll be able to help. The crown of God's creation is man. So so that's the crown of God's creation. So basically, if I can help man, I can help all of God's creation. So why doing that one? During the course of my practice, that's when I realized that, look, as a medical doctor, day in, day out, I go to the clinic, I spend time with the patients and pump up. In reality, I can actually reach out to one individual in the clinic. But some of these things, some of these conditions that the patients come in down to the clinic for, really were things that could be prevented within the community. So that was when that passion. Okay, how can I look at more preventative and all that? I'm looking at not just prevention, but also looking at how can we look at policies that can help some of these conditions on a wider scale. That's when my passion for public health now came up. So by God's grace, I'm doing actually right now at the University of Salford, and my PhD topic is basically looking at the ABCD model in public health. So that's basically my background. So it's kind of like mixing a lot of going to the community, interacting with the community, looking at projects that are generated within the community, organizing them, mobilizing those assets within the community, working hand in hand with the agencies, from the police from the politicians, the local councillors, to the directors of different agencies, institutions, coming around the table, because this particular BCDP is actually run by a steering group, which is called the ABCD Steering Group Bolton. That's at the strategic level. So looking at what partners really want in terms of what their objective, and me, the coordinator of the BCDP, trying to see how I can drive those objectives, working with a very core team. And to be honest with you, I'm blessed with a very core team that is so passionate and dedicated. In short, they inspire me, you know, to do a lot of things. So all these things are some of the things that we do on a day in, day out basis. So definitely it's kind of like naturally it will lead to stress, you know. And that brings me back to this issue on stress.
Okay, yeah. Okay, I'm listening to you.
Okay, so basically like stress, you know, like When somebody hears the word stress, the first thing we think about, first of all, is that negative thing that, oh, it's something that pulls you down, it's something that affects you negatively. But in reality, stress itself is an asset. Because stress, basically, in a very simple term, is the way the body mobilizes all its assets, both chemically, physically, in order to achieve a set goal in front of him. So, for example, you know these athletes, you want to do 100, sprints. You want to do a sprint. The athlete looks at his targets. His body and itself, both chemically and all that, prepares itself to do that sprint. You understand? The process leads to producing those chemicals, like I mentioned earlier, adrenaline, cortisol, all those chemicals. Those chemicals are there to prepare you to either flight or fight. Now, that on its own is a good thing. The problem comes when, like in life, they say too much of everything is bad. You know what I mean? So it's when it becomes too much or sustained, then it starts having a negative effect on the body. Those are the things that people now start connecting. Stress is negative. It affects you. But reality, improperly, when well maintained, really, it's something good. But another thing again, if it's under, that means if there is no stress, that person is unmotivated.
Mm.
So that means that body actually is not. So it's just like saying that same athlete now. You understand? They say, okay, now time to go, on your marks, get set, go. Now, because he's not mobilized, he's still there. So his body is not mobilized. So that means that's where, you see, there's no stress in his body. So the body is not mobilized yet. So it's how to find that balance between overproduction of those chemicals and not even producing them. That is where we are. So it's that balancing act, really, you understand, that makes a difference. You know, so basically, that's stress. And if you tie that again, I mentioned earlier, I talked about we do everything using the ABCD model to try to improve the health and well-being of the community. Mm-hmm. Now, let's look at well-being itself, because that ties down to man itself. You mentioned earlier, you said I'll do scripture because I'm a Christian. So now let me refer to what the scripture says. In 1 Thessalonians 5:23, it identifies that man actually has three parts. Which is, man is primarily a spirit, he possesses a soul, and he lives inside a body. So that means primarily you, myself, Obo, I am a spirit primarily, that's who I am.
Mm-hmm.
So when you call me Obo, it's not this my flesh you can say hi to, no, that's not me. It's that me you don't see, that's the real me, that's Obo. Then he has a soul, that's my capacity for emotion, feelings, intellect. That makes up my soulish realm. Then my body is just my postcode. It's my address. It's my physical address, because my body is what I use in interacting with this dimension. And each of these individual components, when they all work together, that guarantees wellness. So that's what we call well-being. Now, if you look at some different studies or different things about well-being or wellness, it's like different people have different ideas about it. But I think there are about 8 components of wellness that I would say I agree with. One, the social component of individual wellness. That's how you relate with people, how you interact with people. Then we have the environmental components, the physical components, the emotional parts, intellectual components, your career, your spirituality, and importantly, your financial status, your financial components. See, all these components individually play a role in actually either tilting that balance of that stress to either the excessive part, the under part, or to the part of being underproduced. So this component really is that balancing act. So basically, what it's all about. So if you look at, let me give an example now. How people cope with it, like me, for example, how I cope on my daily life in terms of with all the different being drawn left, right, and center. Every day, at least, on an average, I attend almost about 4 or 5 meetings a day, on an average, you know, different stakeholders. But the truth is, what helps me is that all these 8 components, I make sure that the balance in them. Number one, since I'm primarily a spirit, I make sure I feed my spirit. You know, maybe through music, through God's word, you know, because they say God's word is the food of the spirit, you know. And my physical spaghetti and all that is my physical food, you know. Then my intellectual is what I study. So balancing all those ones, so I make sure that they are well fed. At least I try.
Well done.
At least I try.
You see, the thing is, you don't actually try, Dr. Achiyoyamin. You thrive. Because, to be honest with you, I am spellbound here. You've absolutely in managing the stress of of the intellect that the Spirit of God has placed in your postcode and in your soul. You've broken into the end. Any scheduling I've prepared for Life Illegal this morning, in that splendor, you've actually broken into it, and then you're speaking life. You are speaking life to me. And you know, tell you what I'll do is, we'll take a quick musical break. I'm sure our listeners want to take in everything you've said. And tell you what other musical clip will be appropriate at this point, if not by the musical clip by Donald Lawrence, where he says, I speak life. And this is Life Illegal. And my name is HBO Odusoya. Obviously, the only reason I can also speak life is because the one who made me is the one who created life. The one who made you, I believe, is that same one. The all-knowing, the all-seeing one, God Almighty. Thank you so much, Dr. Achiyoyamin. And we're very grateful to have you in. And we do hope you'll stay with us through the course of this.
Thanks, Ben.
It's still your friend and your lawyer, HBO Odusoya, and this is Life and Legal. We will be right back.
We're living in a time where everybody is struggling for their lives. The stressed, the depressed. But with the power invested in me, I came to speak life over you. I speak blessings of health, blessings of peace. To my brothers and sisters all around the world, especially those in South Africa, struggling with AIDS, in Brazil, the States. I speak life, you're gonna live. Oh, my brother, my sister, I speak life. You are the head and not the tail. You will prevail. I speak life. Don't give up the fight for your life. You shall live and not die. Let's not lose another person to a senseless death. Substance abuse, gang violence, suicide because of low self-esteem. The power of life and death is in the tongue. Speak life over yourself and those you love.
Help me sing it.
I speak life, you're gonna live. Oh, my brother.
Say it again.
I speak life, you are the head and not the tail. You will breathe.
Don't give up the fight for your life. You shall live and not die.
Oh, yeah.
this is Jayo Kirai from Braintree, United Kingdom. I just want to say a huge thank you to all our listeners in the UK, from London to Glasgow, Dublin to Swansea. We appreciate the time you spend with us. Thank you for making Roots Radio your number one choice. And if you haven't already done so, please like us today at facebook.com/RootsRadioLove. Thank you for listening to Roots Radio, your network of broadcasters from across the globe.
Hi there, my name is Toyin Okasanjo, and my day is not complete without my Roots Radio.
Welcome back. It's still Life and Legal, and this is HBO Odusoya. We're still doing this stress series, aren't we? Now, we've been speaking to Dr. Obo Akiyamen. Dr. Obo Akiyamen is the coordinator, is one of the key team members at Bolton Community Development Partnership, BCDP. BCDP is a non-governmental, non-profit organization which was established in 2015. It consists of a multidisciplinary team of dedicated men and women from diverse fields of interest, including health, business, research, the civil service, academia, politics, policy, and journalism, faith, and legal background. BCDP says it's passionate working together to build the knowledge base and improve the policy environment for advancing community development in Bolton and Greater Manchester in general. It aims to provide critical data for developing policies and programs for scaling up best practices relating to community development, along with providing support needed to engage with communities and to realize their aspirations. BCDP says it's focused on utilizing the asset-based community lead development approach, which it calls the ABCD, in engaging with its communities. It uses the results of the research to build public health awareness and advocate for policy changes and critical community development issues in Bolton and Greater Manchester in general. Dr. Obo Akiyamen, I'm sure that our listeners would like to know more about some of the pilots which BCDP is involved in, especially Project Engage.
Okay. Thanks so much for that. Thanks so much for the opportunity, like I mentioned earlier. If our listeners can check our website, you see a lot of our projects. I'm at the time now to go through all the projects.
What's that website, please?
So, Project Engage, basically.
What's your website, Dr. Akiyamen?
Mm-hmm.
What's the website? You said
our
listeners can check the website.
Bolton, Bolton, CDP.org.
Okay.
So that's a website. And so when you go to our website, then you can see, when you open the, you see our project, then also you can go to our Facebook page, which is also attached to the website. And also you can also tweet for us, because we have the Twitter handle in that website.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll focus on Project Engage. Now, where Project Engage came from, if you know, first of all, if it is primarily a research platform, then added to the fact that it also gets involved in developing the aspects that supports, you know, communities initiating projects and helping the communities to identify, mobilize their assets so that they can actually lead on those projects. Because it's not just like the old method whereby agencies come and help you lead the project. And when those professionals leave, that project now fades out. So there is no continuity or sustainability. But we helped actually communities to help identify their own assets, mobilize them, then bring in other agencies so that they can actually work together. Three key things that we look at in any of our projects is, number one, we aim to co-design any community project. So any identified issue, the residents of that community play a role. They make their own contribution to it, their own ideas and things they have. Then the agencies, like the government agencies, academic agencies and all that, they bring their own. So in that, they help co-design that thing. Then after co-design, then they're co-producing those same projects together. So after co-producing, it leads to a win-win. Both parties must win, because when both parties are winning, that's when it leads to sustainability and there is a sense of achievement, you know, a sense of well-being for both parties. So that's primarily our aim. Now, when it came to Project Engage, we identified that, let's say in Bolton for a start, or as an example, if you notice the migrant population that are in Bolton or in Greater Manchester, even from your experience too, you find that out. We have a particular community, let's say the Asian background. You know, they actually divide into two major groups there. We have the Hindu bit of them, the Asian background, and we also have the Muslim bit. Mm-hmm. You know that they are so engaged from at all levels, in terms of socially, politically, everywhere, they are well represented. Mm-hmm. But you now find another group of migrants who don't fall within the category of Muslim or Hindu, and they are also not quite British.
Mm.
So that forms another circle in the middle. And that particular group, you find that most of them, the bulk really there, that's where the Africans really fall in. You know, after the Africans have the Europeans, the Caribbeans, they fall within that category. Now, according to census reports, you find out that bulk of the Africans, about 70% of them, according to census reports, says they are Christians.
Mm.
About 70% of them. And now, of that 70% of Africans, for example, who are Christians, majority of them are not really in our mainstream churches. You know, like the Church of England and all that. You don't really find them in those mainstream churches here.
Mm-hmm.
What you find them, actually, you find them in the Pentecostal faith groups. Mm-hmm. And most of these Pentecostal faith groups are actually imported.
Mm.
You understand? So which brings them a connection. So in that case, if we go back to the ABCD, you understand, whereby you look at the individual assets. Now, this guy already has the gift. But association is the driver. You know, just imagine a community as a car. The engine is the association.
Mm.
The faith groups. That's why you notice in America, if you look at everything about America, every change really came from the faith groups. Majority of the social driving change really was pushed by the faith groups.
Okay. Yeah.
Do you understand? Like, for example, the freedom of the race, anything about race, the Martin Luther King, things like that. The church play a lot of role, faith groups play a lot of role because they're drivers. They help sustain that drive.
Mm-hmm.
So if that's the case, if we want to now see how can we engage the Africans in this space, or the other minorities who don't fall within that other categories, then we have to now look at which of the assets can we find them. And they are located within the church, and within the church, they are around the Pentecostals that are not actually represented in the mainstream.
Hmm.
So, fine. How do we now engage them? You go to a particular place. For example, you see some many Pentecostal churches here. They are flourishing. But one of the challenges they are having is that they have a passion to do something for the community, but the problem is that there is a gap between, there is this information gap, there is this transition gap between what they do and what is going on within their surrounding communities. They want to see how can they connect.
Hmm.
Do you understand? So that they become aware, people become aware of what they are, so that they can be able to give back to the community, and that will also establish their roots within this community.
Dr. Akiyoyamin.
Hello.
So you see the churches, especially Pentecost, mm-hmm. particularly the Pentecostal churches, as an asset mm-hmm. then?
It's a major asset. It is a major asset.
However, that's mm-hmm. by the fact that that's an asset. You notice that there's the connect beat is missing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And there's a connect. You see, there is that connection between what they want to do, eh?
Yes.
Within their host community. That information, not just information now, because you can walk into an African, for example, and say, you know what, if you have problem with issues with our housing and everything, go to job center. It's easy to say that, but in reality, when you go to the job center, how many Africans do you really find there?
Mm.
You understand what I'm saying? Because they feel that it's for them, it's for the locals here, it's not our thing. You understand? Mm. And with that, there's a danger that you notice there. Because most of the African communities end up looking inwards. So at the end of the day, because they are not rooted here in a way, because they're not doing things here for the locals, they end up looking back home, which is a good thing. It's not a bad thing. So all their aspiration now is now back to where they came from, which is everything is to go and invest, which is a good thing. So you now have a group of migrants who are physically or bodily, let's say in the UK,
mm.
but spirit and soul, they are back in their country.
Mm.
So every investment goes into their country. Now, here is the other problem now with that one. Because their body is not there in their country, only their assets represented there, how can they actually manage what they are sending back home? So they're not physically present, so they are not rooted back home anymore again. They're not even rooted here. So you now have a group that's actually in, let me use the word, they're not here, they're not back home. So that will affect their productivity.
Mm.
Do you understand what I'm saying? So what you now do now is, okay, how can we enable them to have roots here? That is where this engage comes in. Now, since they don't understand, since that issue of gap is there, okay, let's bring those agencies into their own space
mm.
that they are comfortable with. So let's say the church. Like, for example, we've started this pilot now. In Bolton here, this particular church who has agreed to say, okay, no, there are actually two Pentecostal churches who have agreed to say, okay, let's run this pilot together. On the 25th of September, we actually had an event in one of the churches. And we brought in everybody, from the leader of the council to the police, everybody was seated around. So it became like a town hall meeting with the members. So don't forget, it's not like a church now. We are seeing a church as an association because people are there from residents within the community. So it's not a religious group at that point now. It's a town hall meeting. And you could see the questions that were asked. So many barriers, so many barriers, so many information gaps. We're kind of broken down. And one of the outcome of that meeting is that there's not a need for a job fair. I never knew that, for example, the police really were looking for people who are of African background to employ ASAP. Another thing, the police officers said that we need that ASAP. But if that meeting was not there, how were we able to know that? And how would the police officers, for example, even get to know, pass that information to the right people?
Now, talking about barriers, yeah. Dr. Achiyamen, now, talking about yeah. barriers, I know that one of the things that does come across in terms of what BCDP does is that you have an yeah. area of remit, which is Bolton and Greater Manchester. Yeah. Now, Manchester. What you're doing sounds like something very, very worthy of emulation, and that seems mm-hmm. to be required because you have identified a core in terms of integrating obviously, in this case now, in terms of your project, Engage the African Community.
Engage.
Now, it's mm-hmm. beautiful that you're doing that in Bolton and indeed Greater Manchester. However, it's obvious that across United Kingdom, this is required. How can we breach this barrier, or how can we take away this barrier?
Well, at the moment, like I said at the initial, BCDP is trying to, what we are doing right now, they are actually pilots that we are testing.
Mm.
You understand? So these projects are actually pilot projects. And I remember I mentioned that there's a steering group, ABCD steering group. That steering group is made up of policymakers from a strategic level. So they monitor everything, that, you know, the findings as we do, we evaluate the process. Some of these things will be added into policies so that we can now have testing new ways of doing things. So some of these things could actually become part of the Greater Manchester devolution process, part of the conversation, you get what I mean? So, and in other parts of the countries, if it's something that is successful, it's something that other partners can actually want to emulate or replicate. So but at the moment right now, it's on a pilot phase. So we also look at the outcome. You know, then those outcome is going to be like a learning, sharing experience.
Now, for example, in Huddersfield, where I live, there's been this during the course of this week. We had the climax of, or maybe anticlimax of a campaign which has ran for a long while now, i.e., the community in Huddersfield, the community generally, wanted to stop the closure of the Huddersfield Royal Infirmary, simply because Huddersfield is a very big town, is a university community as well, and now you want to close the accident emergency services and ask people to go miles away to a hospital in, for example, Halifax. Now, the bureaucrats on about 3 days ago decided that this plan was going to go ahead, and there's been, believe me, there's been a very huge outcry. Now, is it that there's no connection between the decision makers in communities and what the common man, the average person in the average homes want when some of these decisions are made? And is there more need, from what you've said, from your experience with BCDP, for engagement between, community decision makers and those within the communities themselves?
When I was told to say, okay, how do we implement this thing in Bolton? I said, okay, there was now, after discussion, there's not a need for these things to actually have effects. What came up was basically, there need to be a steering group, like a strategic steering group. Now, the reason for that steering group was this. We needed the decision makers, who you mentioned, who are the actual people who actually have the knife and the cake, really, to be around the table, do you understand what I'm saying, and observe two things, to observe and also to serve as barrier breakers. So, for example, as these projects are going on in BCDP, the steering group members are actually watching it. They are observing and seeing. So anything BCDP does, really, they forward it. I mean, they report back to the steering group members who are the decision makers. From there, they can actually observe and see what the people really feel. And also, community members are also part of that steering group, too. So, in a way, from the decision, from the conception of that idea to the process, we'll make sure we try as much as possible that decision makers are part of the process at the community level. So that was why there was that steering group. So there's a steering group right now looking at that process. So I think, like, that question you've raised, because when you are at that level, there's passion. They want to do things. But the question is, the information,
are you still there?
Into the decision makers, maybe there's not fully established. So how do we bridge those gaps? So that's the gap we're trying to bridge, to bring both decision makers and the local residents who actually feel the heat, so that both of them can come together, looking at those three points, which is co-design that idea, co-produce that idea, evaluate it, then what's a win for the residents, what's a win for the decision makers. I think
okay.
Yeah. Hello?
You think what? Okay. I'll let you finish that comment.
So basically, that's the win. So that's what we're aiming at a win for both of them. Do you understand? Because there's a danger decision makers will make their decisions. They're passionate. But the truth is that if you look at the climate right now, the finances are shrinking drastically. And so one of the key things that will be in the mind of a decision maker really is to look at finance. Can we sustain this one? Do we have the budgets to do that?
Which is obviously what
first thing they would think about, yeah.
Which is what led to the closure of Huddersfield Royal Infirmary. Now,
I'll give you an example.
Okay.
I'll give you an example. In the US, something similar happened because, as you mentioned, that it just brought me back to something that happened in the US. But the name just a bit hits in my head now. Now, there was a Royal Infirmary. There was this infirmary, this hospital for this thing that wanted to close down because the government could not sustain it. You understand? So what happened was that they wanted to do that. So the community used the ABCD approach. Like, you know what? We can actually take ownership of that thing as a community.
Mm.
You get what I mean?
Yes.
So it took some time. It took some time. And guess what? It was the churches, interestingly enough, that actually pushed for it. They were able to mobilize and got the financing to secure some of the payment and all that, mobilize their people within the community, those who had assets, those who can take care of the elderly on their own, volunteered things. So they were able to mobilize the community over time to be able to take over. But they were not able to take over the whole thing, but at least they were able to secure certain functions within that particular hospital by just looking at the assets within the community. So it was more like a community-driven initiative this time.
Right.
So with this time, because the government, take it or leave it, because of the budget cuts, they will be forced to take drastic actions.
Mm.
But that's where the assets within the community now comes in. How do we now mobilize those assets? First of all, identifying the assets. Who can do what within the community? What can we do within the community? You get what I mean? Who knows what? Mobilizing those people. You understand? Or mobilizing those assets, whether be it physical or all of that, bring all of it together, then come to sit down on the table with the same decision makers and say, okay, you know what? You do from this place to this point. Let's do from here to here. You understand what I'm saying? It becomes a co-producing, co-designing, you know, and it works for both of them.
Talking about community now. Talking about community, quickly, in 30 seconds, how can people be involved?
Okay, to be involved in this project, engage. Now, interestingly enough,
in 30
Aviva
seconds.
Funding,
yes.
Yeah, Aviva Funding has actually chosen Project Engage as one of the projects that we want to fund. But what it means is that there's a competition for community groups. You understand? And so we are applying to keep this project running. We're applying for a particular amount of funds. What it means, so we've chosen. So if the viewers, one way to help us is to vote for us. So all you need to do, you go to our website, click on our website. You go to our Facebook page. You will see the Aviva, Project Engage Aviva. Click on it, register your email, then vote for us. Now, for each for the vote, we have each vote has 10. You have you're entitled to 10 votes. You can split your votes to other Project C, that's in competition. Or if you're so kind to us, you can give us all your 10 votes, which is good because the more we get votes, there's a higher chance of us getting that funding in order for us to sustain this project.
Okay.
So just go to our website.
Yeah.
Go to our Facebook page on our website, click on it, you just see the Aviva, then vote. That will be a big step to help us. And if there's any other information, just contact us through our contact box in email or through our phone numbers.
Simply because we're running short of time, I'm sure listeners will try to do that. Now, for the past 4 weeks, we've been discussing stress and how to cope with it. Obviously, you've touched on that very well. However, you have a young family, and in addition, you have challenges of your busy work life.
Yeah.
Can you share with us in 2 minutes some of the things some of the things
tempting 2 minutes
is going to be very stressful. Some of the things which you do on a daily basis to enable you function effectively. 2 minutes
Now, the first thing I want to look at is Genesis. If we go back to the Bible, because you see, God is the ultimate. We want to take example from it. In Genesis 1, see, the Bible says that in the beginning God created the heaven and the earth was formless and void and darkness produced the day. The spirit of the Lord hovered over the waters to observe what was going on. The earth was dark, no form, everything was in chaos. But the Bible says the very first thing God spoke with his mouth was, let there be light. He saw darkness, but the first thing he was light. He spoke what he wanted to happen. Mm. Now, the same thing too, we are all faced the same challenges the same way he was faced. Just think that he was facing the challenges too by seeing the earth in the ship. But he spoke what he wanted. He did not repeat what he saw. He did not reinforce what he saw.
Okay.
Now, if we go back to Numbers, the Bible says something in Numbers 14:28. The Bible said God told the children of Israelites, he said that, as truly as I live, whatsoever I hear you say, I will do.
Mm.
So that means because they said in their own mouth, you know, don't forget that they went to spy the land of Canaan. 10 of the spies said, they were giants and they were so big. In their eyes, we were like grasshoppers. But in our own eyes, we were indeed like grasshoppers. God was not angry with them for seeing them as grasshoppers, but he was angry because they saw themselves as grasshoppers. Hmm. That means our mind is powerful. What we put in our mind, as a man thinketh in his heart, so he is. So I make sure that whatever is in my spirit is what the word of God says, is what is good. You know, Philippians 4:8 said something. He said, whatsoever is good, whatsoever is of good report. If there's anything, he said, you should think. Because what you think, you create your own force field around you. You know, the Bible says deep collect unto deep. So those are my guiding principles. I make sure that my spirit is protected. My mind is protected with the right information. Because what is inside is what I will speak. That does not mean I'm not faced with challenges. Oh, loads of it. I'm faced with challenges. But at the same time, just like God was faced with a challenge by seeing the earth dark, but he spoke what he wanted. Another quick one. In chapter 1 of that scriptures, it mentioned that God created everything. But chapter 2 also mentions, if you look at chapter 2, it shows that the trees have not grown, the fields have not grown. Why? Because there was no man to till it.
Mm.
So that means chapter 1 told you everything was okay. Chapter 2 said there was nothing had grown because no man to till it.
Chapter 2 why? In 2 minutes. Okay.
I think we need to
bring you back, Dr. Obo, because you're a man of many chapters. And in order to round off things, I know that the core of what you said there is that the spoken word is always very key to your management of stress. And that's brilliant. Yeah. Now, it is interesting that you've mentioned your dependence on spoken word, which obviously also includes prayer.
We started
out the stress series with Dr. May Blossom Brown, and she mentioned prayer's surrender as one of the six pillars of health which she uses.
Mm-hmm.
Now she's mentioned the six pillars as air, water, food, diet, surrender through prayer, forgiveness, gratitude, and herbs. From your own medical background and your ongoing PhD in public health, in another 2 minutes, what's your advice to our listeners regarding these six pillars we've mentioned? Air, water, food, surrender through prayer, forgiveness, gratitude, and herbs. In 2 minutes. Please.
Say that in 2 minutes. Why you mentioned 2 minutes? Because I would say initially when I mentioned those eight circles, those things about well-being and all that.
Hmm.
I was the first thing.
Now we can't hear you there.
Okay.
Yes.
Am I clear now?
You better now.
Oh, thank you. Now I look at in terms of gratitude, in terms of humans. Humans are social people. Do you understand? Humans are primarily social. Mm. So making those connections, because I found out that people, the reason why they are stressed is because they are lonely. And this generation is a threat because people are not going online. Mm. But there is no human interaction. There is no connection. Once we break those barriers and start striking conversations with people, it reduces loneliness and brings down stress. We've seen that in some of our programs. Diets. Issues around diet. I eat healthy. You understand? Mm. I try to minimize things around sugar because sugar kind of like have its own effect that are damaging. I spend time in worship. I spend time praying, especially worship, something calming to suit my spirit. That puts me in the center. That balances me out. So I make sure the spiritual food, I do that. Then, basically, I want to know knowledge. Because one of the reasons why people get worried about things is information. When you don't know about something, it builds your stress level. Because since you don't know what's going to happen at the end of the tunnel. So knowledge, having the right information concerning any situation, whether it be at work, whether it's business or anything at all, whatever any challenge you come, seek for the right knowledge. Because that will calm you down a bit. Then you'll be able to be aware of what you have. And if you don't have that particular thing, who else have that thing? How do I make that connection? That will ease things a bit. Then exercise. Simple exercise. Like me, what I do every morning, if I'm a bit stressed, I just do my 10 press-ups. You know, 10 press-ups, maybe sometimes 15, but not like the military press-up, but just a few press-ups. It says my blood in my body just starts flowing very well, and it calms me a lot. So there's exercise and all that, my food and all. So those are some of the things that I'm looking at. But the key thing is support network. And that's my worry for this, our young generation coming. Mm. Remember in our time, when we were much younger, you know, back home there. You see, kids have the way, you know, when you watch a cartoon, you run outside, you play with your friends and act those things out. You build social connections. These days, we don't have that thing. The internet, the mobile phones and everything are taking that space. But humans are not designed that way. And that will, I can guarantee you, if we say that there's issue with depression and loneliness now, just watch for the next generation coming. That is practically from the beginning on their iPads and on their phone. Do you understand? So that's one of the things that we start looking at. How can we actually create an engagement? Like one of our partner organizations, which is Precious Gems, is now looking at that, looking at and having an intergeneration project whereby the older generation and the younger generation come together, no phones, no electronics. Take things back to the old way so that we can establish those social connections. See, that's our lifeline. You know, in terms of social, that's humans. Humans are social people. They are social because one would say animal. We are not animals. We are social people. Do you understand?
So Obo Akioyamen, you are space. Well, I like to call that is a title that Dr. May Blossom Brown has put in my mouth. But tell you what, I believe we can also adopt that. Monica, for you are a space of infinite possibilities. It's been a great pleasure having this chat with you, and I do hope at some point we will be able to have the pleasure of having you back either on Life Legal or anywhere on RootsRadioLove.com, because we cannot compress you into 1 hour, unfortunately. You're wonderful.
First of all, when you're going there, let me just give a big thanks to our team, Dr. May Blossom, who's like a global connector. She's a major connector, global connector, and she's a gift to the world, actually. Mm. She's a gift to the world. And also our team and everybody that make BSDP work, you know, Dr. Emir, so many members of our team, they're all there. So they're the ones I remember, my wife and my kids.
Talking about teams now, in terms of apart from having you say probably I'll chip in thanks to my wife and kids as well, too. Maybe you want to say a big shout out to the gentleman, the connector on RootsRadioLove.com, DJ Rock City, Mr. Charles Okonlawon, the gentleman in Washington DC. Because when you keep talking all through this period, you're talking about ABCD model. In terms of connecting within a community, the only thing that's one of the things that's been burning in my own mind actually is what this gentleman, Mr. Charles Okonlawon, has been doing with the brand www.rootsradiolove.com. So maybe you want to give a shout out to DJ Rock City. That's what we call him when we want to tone things down in the broadcast lounge. In terms of ABC the model.
Thanks so much for this year. Thanks so much for connecting us to the world. The job you're doing, you'd be amazed how many millions of people that you are reaching. Sometimes you don't see them physically, but believe me, you are reaching lives. Thank you so much.
And Dr. Obo, in 1 minute, give us the parting shot, give our listeners the parting shot for how to go through the this upcoming week and how to be effective. 1 minute.
Okay. In 1 minute.
Yes. Because that's goodbye for
James,
you now.
I'll just put it in James chapter 3, verse 4 and 5, talked about the tongue being the rudder for a mighty ship. Your tongue is important. Speak the right thing. Speak blessing to your life. Speak life. Because what you say is what nature gives back to you. Your words make you. Because you are the head, you are not the tail. You are not what somebody told you you are. You are who you say you are. And nobody controls your destiny like you do with your own mouth. But just know that you are a blessing to this world. And it's a privilege to have you in this world at this time. You are a gift. Always see yourself because that's who you are. You are a gift. Nobody can ever look down on you.
Thank you so very much, Doctor.
Thank you so much.
Doctor Akiyamen, for being a gift to us on RootedInLove.com. We hope to have you back again in the Broadcasters Lounge. Thank you so much. We give you love from here.
Thanks so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you. It's on that note, you're still tuned to RootsRadioLove.com. It's HBO Odusanya. We will be switching over now to talk about the situation with the judges, the DSS, and we have in the breakfast lounge with us another gentleman, just like Dr. Obo. But this time around, this is he's a legal practitioner, Mr. James Kanuba. It's still your friend and your lawyer, HBO Odusanya. Talking about words, the next musical clip I'm going to play, Dr. Obuz has mentioned to us how important the words of our mouths are. But however, this gentleman here, Dr. Victor Olaya, I do hope he's not making a mockery of that. But I believe he isn't. He's a legend. Just listen to the underlining point of this musical clip. He says, Iluleo. It's still your friend and your lawyer, HBO Odusanya, and we will be right back.
Hello, my name is Omolara Osher and I live in London, and when I need to relax to some great music and cultural updates, I go to the right source, rootsradiolove.com, my number one source for entertainment and news on top of every hour.
Welcome back to the broadcast lounge of RootsRadioLove.com. It's still HBO Odusoya, your friend and your lawyer. And tell you what, I have back with me in the broadcast lounge of RootsRadioLove.com, Mr. James Kudi Kanoba, the brilliant gentleman who helped us out with the issues regarding the arrest of judges and indeed the legality or otherwise. Well, we didn't really touch much on the legality or otherwise of the actions of the DSS. But whether or not the actions were legal, it will seem that the event of the DSS arresting those judges, with all due respect to their lordships, has thrown out a number of things, and we don't know what's going to happen next. As it is, we never know what's going to happen the next minute in this saga. Mr. James Kudi Kanoba, you're welcome to the broadcast lounge of RootsRadioLove.com.
Thank you, Tunde, for having me. It's my pleasure.
You're welcome. Now, before we go into the issues about DSS and what have you, earlier on we had the Dr. Obo Akiyamen on the Broadcasters Lounge of RootsRadioLove.com discussing stress and stress management. You're a lawyer. You're, I don't want to start reeling out your CV, but one thing I know is that in your student days, you were at the forefront of human rights activism, student unionism. I don't know if you're still a human rights activist, considering the fact that you're one of the big-time lawyers in Nigeria these days. That's I wouldn't want to go into that debate with you, but one thing I would want to ask you: in your busy life as a legal practitioner, how do you manage stress in 2 minutes?
Okay, how do I manage stress?
Yes.
Well, as a lawyer, I try to take myself out of the cases. Oh. In other words, even though I try to pursue my litigation and other things that I do for my clients with the passion and the diligence that it requires, I try not to put myself in the center of it all, so that it doesn't become stressful. Sometimes I just shut down. So dealing with stress for me is I try to find to make time with family. I have young children, and every time I'm with them, I just forget everything. I become a child again, and it's quite a relaxing experience, as I guess you would have experienced yourself.
Mm.
So that's what I do. I try to make sure I spend some quality time with family, my children, my wife, and not get too much involved on a personal and emotional level into the work that I do as a professional.
Wow, brilliant. Thank you so much for that. I wish a number of colleagues will hear that in terms of taking themselves out of it all, making out time for family, making out time to be a child again, as you call it, and making out time to play. All work and no play makes Jack a dull boy, they say. And it's remarkable you said that the other way you manage stress is that you try and take yourself emotionally out of the cases you handle. Talking about taking yourself out of it emotionally, it's remarkable as well that last week on the show, you sort of took yourself, the sentiments out of the old issue about the arrest of the judges and whether or not what the DSS did was okay. And then your take on it was that in as much as you're not saying that the NJC is superhuman or very effective or very efficient or that is devoid of all blames, the fact still lies that we may have what seems like a systematic problem, an institution building problem.
Yes, indeed. The whole thing boils down to the systems. And, you know, over the course of this week, a few things have happened that have been very interesting, you know, that maybe you can draw analogies over. Mm-hmm. For example, in America, as you may know, the last presidential debate was held this week, mm-hmm. and the Republican nominee, Donald Trump, has said, "Well, I'm not going to be categorical on whether or not I'll accept the results of the elections." Mm. And people, including his own party, the Republican Party, and indeed a cross-section of well-meaning Americans and prominent American politicians have come out to say, no, but that's the basis upon which our democracy is built. Now, that's a culture that they have carried. Even when in 2000, I believe, Al Gore asked for a recount.
Yes.
At the end of the day, it wasn't a process that he pursued in a manner that he supported. Love him to pursue. Mm. Now that's because there's a system and you have to build, you have to have belief in that system, and you cannot then start impugning the integrity of the system even before you get to that stage. Mm. Now that's the problem we have in Nigeria. Do we have those kind of systems? Are the key stakeholders, in which case I'm talking about whether it's the executive, the NJC, or just ordinary people like you and I, in Nigeria, do they have that kind of belief in the system? So, and that's what we need to move our country forward.
Mm.
We need systems. We need people to have belief in the systems. Okay? So long as you don't have that, you are going to have issues. Already you have issues with the other arms of government. People believe the president, for example, in all his appointment has displayed a very strong sense of nepotism. That's because people don't believe in the system that has thrown up the person that he has appointed. As a matter of fact, during the course of a week or two ago, the wife of the president has herself challenged some of those appointments, you know. So that means there's a lack of belief in the system. You go to the National Assembly, which is the legislature, and you have several similar problems. When they come out to do public hearings, investigative hearings, and all, people take them with a pinch of salt because nobody believes in those systems. Now, and these are integral parts of the society. So, at what point can we begin to say we are building our nation? I do not think that our nation is just about looking for foreign aid, going up and down, talking about foreign direct investments, when this investment doesn't even touch the life of the people. like access to education, healthcare, and even justice are becoming like rocket science, delivering them to the ordinary Nigeria. So you need to build a system where people can say, if I have a dispute with my neighbor, no matter who my neighbor is, if I go before a judge, I'm sure to get justice. Now, that's the interesting point, because justice is like a thread that holds the fabric of the entire society together.
Yes.
Now, so long if that thread collapses, the fabric collapses, people will resort to self-help. I've heard Professor Ishe Sagi make some comments during the course of the week trying to justify this arrest, almost as if saying that the executive had no option than to resort to self-help. That's the issue. How would the executive feel if everybody on the streets resorts to self-help? Would you still have a government? Now, that's a grave concern to me. First, as a Nigerian. Second, as a lawyer. Because when persons who have the ears of government speak in these terms, then you become very worried. You become very worried. Yes. Now, look at the situation. Just a minute. Gradually, the facts, if you like them, are coming out. It's not just about corruption. It's about a particular kind of corruption. You have accused the judges of taking bribes to give judgments to PDP politicians in the election petitions tribunals generally. The judges have come out now to say, no, you are only harassing us because we are approached by APC, particularly the name of Right Honorable, that's how he's called, Chibuike Rotimi Amaechi, who used to be the governor of River State and who is the minister for transportation. Now, the judges have said, we are approached by this minister and we turned him down. And that's why we are in this situation that we are in. So, it's nothing about the inefficiency of the NGC.
Now, in terms of that, maybe, just maybe, this self-help venture by the president, and indeed the DSS, has opened up a Pandora's box or a box of canker worms. What is blowing in the wind? On that note, we'll be taking a quick musical break, and when we come back, we will get some updates from you, Mr. Kanoba, in terms of have we opened the box of Pandora, and what exactly does that portend for Nigeria, and what can we do to see how best whatever this change process, if you can call it that, if it can still all go well for the Nigerian Federation. You're still tuned to Life and Legal. This is HBO Odisoya, your friend and your lawyer. And Bob Dylan says, blowing in the wind, the only musician that we know, at least in recent times, to have won the Nobel Prize for Literature. I'll be right back.
How many roads must a man walk down before you call him a man? How many seas must the white dove sail before she sleeps in the sand? Isn't how many times must the cannonballs fly before they're forever banned? The answer, my friend, is blowing in the wind. The answer is blowing in the wind. Thank you. Yes, and how many years can a mountain exist before it is washed to the sea? Yes, and how many years can some people exist before they're allowed to be free? Yes, and how many times can a man turn his head and pretend that he just doesn't see? The answer, my friend, is blowing in the wind. The answer is blowing in the wind. Yes, and how many times must a man look up before he can see the sky? Yes, and how many ears must one man have before he can hear people cry? Yes, and how many deaths will it take till he knows that too many people have died? The answer, my friend, is blowing in the wind. The answer is blowing in the wind.
Roots Radio. Radio. A global network of broadcast professionals.
Welcome back. It's still your friend and your lawyer, HBO Odusanya, and that was Bob Dylan there. How many DSS raids, how many Amechi accusations would tell us as Nigerians, or maybe Mr. Kanoba and myself as lawyers, that there's something systematically wrong with the Nigerian system? Mr. James Kanoba, have we opened a box of Pandora then?
I hope not, but it will appear soon, okay? Because now everybody knows that the politicians visit judges in the dead of night. If you read Justice Ian Kukuru's letter to the CJN, we also now hear that judges visit politicians in the dead of night. If you read Justice Nguta's own letter to the CJN. So the question is, what happens after all these revelations? Interestingly, and this is what many people are overlooking, the judges have been accused of taking bribes. My next question is, taking bribes from who? Now, in Nigeria, under the Corruption and Other Related Corrupt Practices and Other Related Offenses Act, both the giver of the bribe and the receiver of the bribe have committed an offense.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we have only heard the DSS raiding the House of Judges and saying, you've taken bribe. The DSS said there's a sting operation, which means, what I understand it to mean, is that we have observed you over the course of time. You've been doing this to our knowledge. So you've been accepting bribes. But the DSS hasn't come out to say from whom. Problem. So is it likely that the DSS is hiding the faces or the hand that gave the bribe? Or is it that, well, the judges were self-corrupting? Now, so if the judges are not self-corrupting, which I do not think is possible, why are you not calling out the name of the other person? And that's why I think there's a difficulty in the prosecution. Because if you are going to prosecute these judges, that's when you will open the say, well, X gave me this money or Y gave me that money. Now, you don't want to put yourself in that kind of situation, especially with this government which has come with this messianic complex of, you know, I will solve all the problems. Now, and that's a big issue. So again, we have a situation more like a catch-22 situation. On Thursday, 2 days ago, I appeared before a certain judge who was to be arrested in Port Harcourt.
Mm.
Okay? So I appeared before that judge. He's still sitting. Just yesterday in the news, we heard that the NBA president has advised that the judges recuse themselves. This morning, we are hearing the NJC has faltered the position of the president of the NBA because the NJC is saying we can't suspend a judge who is not under investigation by the NJC.
Mm-hmm.
So that brings to the question, if you are going to charge them to court, are they still going to be dispensing justice to other people when themselves are facing criminal prosecution? What does that tell on the integrity of the justice that they met out? So we have put the cart before the horse, and it has brought us to this situation. Now, the next thing, again, is that we have built a tradition of some respect for the judiciary. Over the course of the last 56 years now, I think,
yes,
we've had several coup d'etats, changed violent overthrow of government and sometimes peaceful overthrow of government. But the judiciary has always remained. It's never been overthrown. Our body of laws have developed through the military regimes until now.